The opinions expressed in the Keeping It Sporty podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Keeping It Sporty podcast. As always, you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, or on our website at keepingitsporty.com. On today's episode, I am joined by a very special guest. He is a sports analyst, senior producer, and sportscaster who has worked for various companies, including CBC, CTV, Sportsnet, and TSN. He is also a teacher in the RTA community at Toronto Metropolitan University, where I have the pleasure to attend, and I've had him as a prof as well for a camera class this semester. I welcome to the show the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Berlin. Dan, or Professor Dan, how's it going?
Hey, Elias. Everything's going great. Super glad to be here. I can certainly address that I am the man as opposed to myth and legend. Hopefully, by the end of today's session, I'll be able to absolutely live up to both of those monikers. But it is great to be here and great to connect with you in the audience today.
So you've had an illustrious career working basically everywhere, as I just mentioned in the introduction. How did you begin your journey in the sports industry?
Yeah, it's an interesting one at that. And I will say, you know, that when I look back to being even a child, my love of sport was undeniable. You know, one of my first memories was as a six-year-old following in literally my father's footsteps in 3 feet of snow, crossing through a park to get to a subway to have him take me to my first Maple Leafs game when I was only 6 years old. And then having the opportunity to just, you know, have an insatiable appetite for consuming sports my entire life, to the point where I used to get in trouble for trying to sneak upstairs at midnight as a seven-year-old because I had this, you know, burning desire to watch Monday Night Football every week. And, you know, I would get in trouble, but my parents were more kind of amazed that here was this seven-year-old that, you know, wanted to give them a recap of why the Browns and the Jets was apparently the most compelling matchup of the week. So this started to really come honestly to me. And just to fast forward, I actually spent my 25th birthday in Australia, where I had a great passion for baseball. And I played a lot of baseball growing up, baseball through my high school years. And while I had some opportunities to pursue colleges in the U.S., that didn't really pan out. But I did pursue baseball in Australia as a 25-year-old. And had a really a wonderful experience, and then came back only to find out that Sportsnet had just launched. And one of my close friends from high school was working at Sportsnet as an associate producer and introduced me to the production manager, who eventually hired me at an entry-level position as a broadcast associate. And that's really where I got my start at Sportsnet and had a chance to, over my 11 years at Sportsnet, worked my way up into a, you know, producer and senior producer role, while also having the chance to do some on-air work as well. And when I, you know, ultimately finished my 11-year tenure at Sportsnet, covering All-Star games, covering Super Bowls, and just having this, you know, incredible experience being around sports and athletes and telling their stories, you know, ultimately, I started to consider what a career change could look like. And that led me to become a professor while still being able to capitalize on my sport media skills and passion as well. So at least in a nutshell, that's kind of how I got my start, Elias.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting that around the time that you were in Australia, that Sportsnet ended up starting, and you got. I guess they were really looking for people back then. Would you say that's correct?
I would absolutely agree. And you know, back in those days, there was a lot more upward mobility to be able to grow there than maybe you see now. You know, Sportsnet, of course, has established itself as really the number one network in Canada. So, you know, the opportunity to go from a broadcast associate to a senior broadcast associate to then becoming an assignment editor to a producer to then, a features producer and a field producer. While doing on-air work, I had a chance to wear a lot of different hats and to really be able to become a versatile professional, and certainly, wouldn't have traded that opportunity or experience for anything. There really was a lot of opportunity to get my foot in the door back when I did.
And how would you say, I mean, the industry has evolved over time? Because there's definitely been a lot of changes throughout the years, and then especially leading up into the pandemic, of course, with the virtual space. What kinds of changes have you witnessed personally over the years?
Well, I think the single biggest change comes down to the fact that anyone has the opportunity now to create content and be able to connect that content to audiences. And in some cases, there's actually more opportunities through more organizations to be able to do it. When I broke in, you looked at a Sportsnet, a CBC, or a TSN, or back in those days as well, the Score. And those were like the holy grails of being able to work in sport media. You either had an opportunity to get a job in one of those places, or you weren't working in the industry. Now, and of course, all of these networks, and back then, even the newspapers at that time, the Toronto Star, the Sun, the Globe, had robust sports departments as well. And all of these agencies were the gatekeepers for the stories that audiences wanted to hear about, local stories about their favorite players on their favorite local teams, or the coverage of national leagues like baseball and hockey and football and basketball, and certainly later on, the growth of soccer and more and women's sports. But I will just say that now what you see are teams and leagues now hiring professionals to help them tell their stories. And now we see even bigger players entering the scene, the Netflixes and the Apple TVs. And now we see how we consume content going through a major change where, back when I broke in, it was newspapers and it was linear television. And now, of course, it's streaming and it's just changing in terms of how we now need to be able to find where the audiences are to connect. So that's kind of the biggest change I would say from a landscape standpoint. But what hasn't changed is the desire to hear great sports stories. So whether they're told first person by the athletes themselves or by sports tellers and content creators like yourself, Elias, a burgeoning, content creator. There's probably more opportunity than ever to be able to tell good stories. Now, what it really comes down to is how you can build an audience or be part of a group that has a built-in audience to be able to really magnify and be able to broadcast that message in meaningful ways. Kind of like your Keeping It Sporty podcast, right? Like this is such a great platform to do it. And I'll just finish by saying, I think what we're experiencing right now with the growth of women's sports is incredible to see. One of the biggest changes I would say, and it's certainly one of the primary reasons why I got into teaching within the RTA Sport Media program, was because I wanted to be someone who could help promote a change in the culture of sport media. When I came through, it was male dominated, and in some cases, that domination led to a masculine toxicity, male toxicity, or toxic masculinity would be sort of the proper sociological term for how these organizations operated, where women did not have a place at the table, and it was such, a clear and distinct lack of diversity amongst the people who were working at these networks. And that being said, we've seen a tremendous amount of change, both in how women's sports are being received to by all as something that has a tremendous value and deserves to receive a place of legitimization alongside male sports, where it suffered as second fiddle for for so many years. And part of the reason why is based on leaders and their lack of willingness to embrace women's sports on an equal and level playing field. So, I mean, it's a long answer to a great question, which is to say that there has been great change, and in many ways, I would say the change has been very positive.
Yeah, I want to touch back on a few points. So definitely women's sports rather coverage has grown. And I think that that's very important. And as you mentioned, that when you were first sort of getting into the industry and for a while, it was definitely male dominated. And so it's really nice to see this change sort of occur these days. The second thing I want to touch back on was certainly this day and age, it's hard to grow an audience. And I think that's the biggest thing that you kind of pointed out there. Especially with podcasts like my podcast and others as well, no matter the medium, it's certainly hard to be able to grow an audience. So, in your opinion, how do you think that people can grow their audiences and can be able to push out content in a more effective manner, maybe we can say?
Well, I sort of look at that twofold. Number one, in terms of growing audience, maybe those who find some success might have a built-in audience. Part of the success of linear broadcast networks is because that was where you had to go to be able to get content. That channel 30 or that channel 22 that, symbolized how you could find TSN and Sportsnet were sort of ingrained in how certainly I was growing up, and maybe in your early years as a 2-year-old when you first held a remote control. But, so it's that idea of built-in audiences. So, of course, athletes have built-in audiences, right? Teams and leagues have built-in audiences, and they might have a easier time being able to directly market themselves to consumers. Now, Elias, to your point, if you now look at yourself as a third-party person who's trying to build an audience, I mean, of course, it comes down to, marketability, the uniqueness of your brand. And when we talk about, marketability, is it something that maybe fills a gap within the landscape? And additionally, really, marketing efforts are a great way to help stand out. The consistency, not just in producing the podcast, but how you would potentially look for meaningful ways to connect that podcast to your audience on a regular basis is also part of the strategy required to build audiences. But as we know, of course, there's the virality of having something that maybe just does go viral and does put somebody on the map, whether it's through TikTok or through YouTube or otherwise. That is one element. But I think what you're speaking to, Elias, and I'm sure you would agree, is that, building an audience can be very slow and somewhat, difficult to gain traction within a landscape where there's a lot of competition for eyeballs and for ears as well.
Yes, definitely. I think that's one of the biggest things that you just touched upon is the competition. It's difficult these days because it seems like new podcasts are popping up and there's big podcasts that people tend to listen to as well. And so it becomes pretty difficult for, I want to say the little guy almost to be able to be successful, but it's all about building up your brand. I totally agree with you there. I also wanted to touch back on one more point that you made regarding streaming services. So we've seen Netflix, for example. They've had the Logan Paul versus Mike Tyson fight. Do you think that's the way we're heading, where streaming services are going to basically more or less completely take over, and these companies such as Sportsnet and TSN, the original sports platforms, are going to sort of just decrease in popularity and more or less, I don't want to say disappear, but become a little bit smaller than what they are now. Do you think that's where we're headed?
Well, I think yes and no. I mean, even Netflix just recently announced that they won the US rights to broadcast Women's World Cups in 2027 and 2031. And that's interesting. Much like as these major players continue to accrue major rights deals. Where I think we're going to see in Canada is sort of a protectionism in the sense that because we now have streaming and multiple new players emerging as part of the landscape, is what it could mean very well is that the Sportsnets and TSNs may just get a smaller piece of the pie. But I do believe that there will remain a piece of the pie for these networks. So, for instance, even if we just look at the Amazon Prime deal to take over Monday Night Hockey in Canada, for instance, as just one example of maybe in some cases where, again, where are the audiences? Sportsnet is looking at, listen, they had a built-in audience on Channel 22 through linear broadcast, and what they see is, of course, every year more and more people are cord cutting. And that hasn't translated into more people or those same amount of people immediately moving to the app and subscribing to the app. So, from a business model standpoint, that's where this really comes into play. You know, for the linear or legacy media companies, how do they continue to maintain their relevancy? Sportsnet partnering with Amazon and having this deal where they ultimately give up a piece of their pie so it can be shown on Amazon could be seen as a very strategic move as Sportsnet looks to maybe create new alliances that have the opportunity to help them from a business standpoint. But make no mistake about it, these major players that are digital first streamers have an advantage over legacy broadcasters because they've built something from the ground up that is ingrained and built into how audiences expect to be able to interact with that brand. And for Sportsnet, it may just not be as instinctive for people to say, oh, I'm going to go onto, you know, the App Store and get the Sportsnet. Oh, and now you're telling me it costs this much in order for me to be able to just access the sports I want. And there's so much content out there that people start to go, hey, what if I had a budget of X number of dollars per month? Maybe it's not going to be Sportsnet or TSN as it used to be, just an automatic as a bundle with your package. So, part of this bundling is actually the next phase of what this ultimately will look like. And we are already seeing it on Amazon. And Amazon is probably most poised to position themselves as the future bundler. We already see it now. If you go on there on Amazon Prime's interface, you can subscribe to many different streaming platforms directly through the Prime platform. So they're already becoming an aggregator, much like, you know, Rogers and Bell were the cable companies that you had to subscribe through to get the services that you want. I think we're just starting to see some of these trends play out. But the one big thing, Apple TV Plus, you know, Netflix, certainly Amazon, that we're starting to see enter into the sports rights landscape. They have built-in audiences, huge audiences, and they're driving the future of rights and what equates to, hey, if you're going to spend X number of $100 million on a certain sport, the biggest thing is that these companies, these media companies, want to be able to get a return on their investment. And, you know, certainly when Sportsnet signed that 12-year deal over a decade ago for 5 point, you know, 2 or $5.6 billion, you know, being able to leverage digital rights and be able to figure out how to make that money back has probably been their single biggest challenge that they've had to face, not the quality of their production or doing justice to the NHL and its product. I would say Sportsnet's product is, you know, second to none, really, in terms of, you know, and TSN, of course, also has a high quality of production. But these new players have built-in audiences and, of course, have deeper pockets, And that is where it might give them a competitive advantage. And the last thing I just want to mention, whether you talk about Netflix on Christmas Day, again, built-in audiences. People are home on Christmas and they want to watch sports. Or what I think is even more fascinating, we haven't even seen anywhere close to the full potential of this, was the creation of the Black Friday NFL game specifically for Amazon. Amazon actually believes that not only is there a built-in audience on Black Friday, but from a consumerism standpoint, more people are in a buy now mode versus Christmas Day, where they've kind of already spent on Christmas and maybe aren't in as much in a position or mood to spend as they are on Black Friday. And as we start to see new immersive, interactive viewing experiences emerge, you have to start to think what the future of this Black Friday sportscast as a pilot for the rest of the industry can look like. Are we watching these games through headsets in a virtual or augmented reality place where, of course, we're getting personalized feeds and what it is that we're shaping the broadcast to look like, combined with, the business aspect of integrating, the Uber Eats and the other companies that are creating this kind of holistic sports viewing experience that integrates all of these different partnerships to allow us to have kind of everything we want at the touch of a button. So anyway, I'm very curious to this, but that speaks to the landscape, and it certainly speaks to these new emerging players, the big players that are entering the scene.
Professor Dan Berlin, thank you so much. It is honestly a great honor for me to be able to have you on my podcast to discuss everything with regards to the sports industry, hearing about your experiences. If I had 2 hours, I'm sure that we could have spoken for 2 hours about all your experiences, maybe even more in the sports industry, because you're just, well, you have such an amazing career. So I really want to thank you for coming on to talk about that.
Well, Elias, thanks for having me. And I'll just, as a final word, the privilege and honor is as much mine as it is yours. As you realize, even with professional athletes, and I've had a chance to be with a microphone in front of anyone from Michael Jordan to, Chris Webber and Vince Carter to, all the hockey players that we grew up, José Theodore, I remember, having a great interview with him. And I'll just say this, people are people. And, I think you, Elias, really carry yourself with a great deal of professionalism, dignity, and tact. And I think it'll continue to serve you well. So, thank you for having me on your show. And I certainly wish your Canadians maybe a little bit more success.
That would definitely be nice, for sure. But once again, thank you so much. You've been listening to the Keeping It Sporty podcast. Don't forget to listen to us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, or on our website, keepingitsporty.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at Keeping It Sporty. That's KEEPIN, no G, it sporty, SPORTY. I've been your host, Elias Strakos. So long, and see you next time.